You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Now, you'd think if you were writing checks as large as $700 billion or $500 billion or $50 billion, whatever the Federal Treasury is writing in the financial bailout, that you'd keep track of the people you were writing the checks to. And indeed, Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, during the negotiations for the financial bailout with Congress, promised transparency and accountability. But a couple of months in, we actually don't know where much of the money in the so-called financial rescue package is going. Bloomberg News and the Fox Business Network have filed Freedom of Information Act requests for information. Fox has filed a lawsuit. Dan Gross, senior editor of Newsweek, joins us now on the line from Connecticut. Dan, thanks for being a part of the program.
Good morning, John.
What is the mechanism for accountability here? And we've spoken as recently as about a month ago with some individuals on Capitol Hill who said that much of the mechanism for oversight wasn't in place yet but was getting there. It sounds as though nothing much has happened.
So, well, in theory, we were supposed to get updates from Treasury, Henry Paulson, and from the Federal Reserve, the two parties that are implementing this. And in practice, they have been less than forthcoming. I don't know if you mentioned it, but Bloomberg News and I believe Fox Business Channel have basically filed, Freedom of Information Act and other types of lawsuits trying to get them to disgorge this information. I think there are kind of three factors at work here. One, the Federal Reserve, there's a great book about the Fed called Secrets of the Temple. So they're accustomed to operating largely in secret and in privacy.
That's the William Grider book, right?
Yes.
It's about Volcker's period.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but this notion that, it's this kind of black box. You don't see what's going in there. There's no C-SPAN. They disclose what they want to disclose because they're this independent entity. A second thing you have is sort of the Wall Street arrogance, where it's the bank saying, well, we'll take the money, but we're not going to tell you what we're doing with it or how much we got because, this kind of legacy of arrogance and hubris. And the third is what I would call the kind of Jack Nicholson factor. If you remember A Few Good Men and the scene in the courtroom where he says, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
Remember that? Part of what's going on here is that the Fed and Treasury have basically taken on or lent against all these assets to these banks. And the fear is that if it was really disclosed to the market just how little a lot of these, junky mortgages and CDOs and funky securities, if the public and the markets at large knew precisely what they were worth, which would be a low number because there is no market for these now,
right?
That would cause a whole new series of freakouts and trigger the same type of situation we had in the spring where people, these financial institutions, suffer effective run on the banks. I'd compare it to, let's say this is something we could all understand. If we all bought condos in a building and we all paid $1 million and we all borrowed $800,000.
Mm-hmm.
We had these nice condos, and the market started going south, and we all thought that, okay, maybe their value was down to $900,000, but nothing was really selling. And there was one guy who really needed to move, and he got his rich uncle to sort of buy his condo, but he was only able to sell it for $300,000. Now, everybody else in the condo wouldn't want that information to get out there. Because all of a sudden that establishes a new market. If someone was only willing to pay $300,000, how could everybody else be valuing it at two and three times? And then you could imagine what would happen. The banks that lend to those condos.
But Dan, aren't we already there, though? That's the question. We know they're not worth anything near what they are on paper. And this lack of transparency just seems outrageous. Do you buy the argument that if you release the information, it signals weakness and therefore will make it harder for the economy to bounce back, the financial economy to bounce back?
I buy that, but I think our need as a great democracy that one of the principles is that the people have some knowledge of where their money is going, I think that imperative outweighs the negative side. We've already told the world and told each other that the government is going to do whatever it takes to get us out of this mess. several hundred billion dollar bailout, trillion dollar stimulus package, you know, you name it. And so this notion that institutions and the market somehow can't handle the truth, I think, you know, it would certainly be negative, but we've committed to dealing with the outcomes, and we've also committed, you know, when you spend money without having taxes to pay for it, it's essentially a huge tax increase on people in the next few years or the next generation.
Well, let's talk for a minute about the numbers for a second. I mean, you know, I understand the sort of cultural argument that you're making, which explains the behavior of these folks, that they're used to secrecy, that when we hear we're doing everything to solve this crisis, whatever it takes, we're going to do. In fact, what they're hearing is more along the lines of leave us alone. We're taking care of it. We don't want you in our way. That I get. But what are the numbers that we really don't know here? I mean, what checks have been written that are just kind of out there in the ether, Dan?
Well, it's not so much checks, because the TARP, right, that was the bailout legislation passed in the fall, which gave the Treasury Department, you know, up to $700 billion. And that was where, you know, we went to each bank and say, okay, Chase, you take $20 billion, you know, First National, whatever, you take $500 million, et cetera. There has been some transparency in that. The question there is, okay, what are those banks now going to do with it? So that's the direct expenditures.
Right.
But at the same time, the Federal Reserve has been lending hundreds of billions of dollars through various programs and one-off arrangements, et cetera. And when they lend, it's not like, you know, you sign a mortgage and they give you money and I guess they have a claim against your house. When you lend, it's frequently against collateral. So, you know, I'm a bank. I have what I think are $100 million of mortgages, and I will present that. I will put that up as collateral, and they'll lend me, you know, some percentage of that. They'll lend me $80 million against the $100 million.
So the
that's been going on a very large scale.
And the Treasury believes that its lending component of all of this bailout is not subject to traditional accounting and congressional oversight?
That's kind of the message we're getting.
You can't handle the truth!
Dan, you're right. I can't handle the truth. You're actually correct on that, Dora.
You need me in that Federal Reserve, in that marble building.
I mean, Dan, we're talking about at least $2 trillion from what's been reported, and a lot of this money was prior to the bailout plan. So at what point are we as taxpayers going to be able to know exactly where all of this money is going?
Well, you would hope that when we have a new administration and a new Congress coming in, that there will be kind of more aggressive oversight and demands. I think part of what's going on here is that, we've talked about the motivations of the people involved. When you start to break down the politics, you know, who in Washington is going to stand up and get red in the face and scream about this? You know, it wasn't the Bush administration. It wasn't the Republicans, well, maybe some of the Republicans in the House and Senate who opposed this, but they're essentially powerless. And you look at who runs things on the Democratic side, you know, Chris Dodd, Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton, Frank Lautenberg. These are the senators from the states of financial services. They are very invested in the system and likewise. So to expect the head of the Senate Finance Committee to stand up and start cracking heads together about this, we might not
right.
get that from this crowd.
Lautenberg doesn't even want transparency. He lost a ton of money in the Madoff scandal. So, right. I mean, you can't really expect demands from him. All right, quickly, before we go, is it possible that as we move out of the sort of emergency zone of this financial bailout and begin to write new rules for how to deal with this fundamentally new role for the Fed, that we're going to get some of these mechanisms in place and we're going to learn more of how the Fed is actually lending?
I would certainly hope so. You know, again, we are, you know, for decades, when the Fed was basically an independent agency, you know, it's owned by its member banks. It doesn't necessarily get an appropriation from Treasury every year. And so its argument for the lack of transparency was, you know, we're not a part of the executive branch. We're not like the Treasury Department or the State Department. We don't have a line item budget that Congress, we have this job to do. We're owned by the banks. We get our money from where we get it, and we do with it what we please because, we're managing interest rates. When you are, in effect,
we got to go, Dan. We're running out of time here, but you're right that it's a whole new world for the Fed. Dan Gross, senior editor of Newsweek, on the line from Connecticut. Merry Christmas, Dan.
Merry Christmas to you.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.